I slam my penis in the car door.
You slam your penis in the car door.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Couch Dimension, our video games podcast, where we're talking about video games and video game news through a legal developer and player perspective. I'm Tiny Dig Dude. I am joined today by
Captain
and Red.
And it slammed my penis in the car door Tuesday, gang. That's right. We took last week to have like just some fun and talk about kind of some fun topics. And we were flabbergasted when between last week and this week, every game company has decided to slam their penis in a car door. And we're going to talk about it. But before we get to all the bad news we have, Captain, why don't you lead us off with something that's actually kind of light and fun?
So, Nintendo, on their main account on Twitter, it's Twitter, announced that the successor to the Nintendo Switch will be announced within this fiscal year, which means it's an announcement of an announcement. But as they point out, it's been 9 years since they announced the original Nintendo Switch, which makes me feel ancient. They're going to hold a Nintendo Direct in June about the software lineup for the current Switch. But they're saying there's not going to be a mention of the Switch's successor during. I actually have a surprise for you. I've been hiding here in the cushions, but, let me get this. I have the successor to the Switch right here.
Now, shit.
You may see, it appears just to be an ordinary box.
Uh-huh.
But I would like to ask you, Salt, to put your hand within this box.
What?
Now hold on.
What's in the box?
Just put your.
It's not pain, is it? Because last time a Bene Gesserit motherfucker tricked me into this one. I live to regret it, friend.
See. I see where you're coming from. You've confused this with the Gamja Bar. This is the Game Jabar.
Oh, okay. Well, yep. Here we go.
Did they lose a lawsuit against Nintendo back in the 90s?
Now, Red, you might notice that Red is holding a needle to your throat. That's if you remove your hand from the box due to the sheer amount of fun you were having. But yeah. you can't pull your hand out until it's done. You're about to experience all the possible fun you may have with the game Jabbar in 3, 2, 1.
I must not have fun. Fun is the game killer.
Now, what you just felt was just a taste of our Nintendo's new game, Mario Slaps Your Nuts. How do you?
I'm looking forward to the sequel, Mario Slams Venus in a Car Door.
Now, you were close, actually, to our tagline, Fun is the Mind Thriller. You can take your hand out of the box now.
Yeah, I had a great time. I would highly recommend
the Game Jabbar.
I would highly recommend the Game Jabbar. It's pretty great. Though, in all seriousness about when you're going to be able to hear about the Game Jabbar, for those that don't speak business, the end of fiscal year 2024 is on June 30th. So if they're going to give it to us before the end of the fiscal year, that'll be before the end of June. And so my big question on this really is it just going to be a beefier Switch? And are they going to choose to not play it safe and just make something entirely new and possibly worse? Or as the Red January has suggested in chat, what if it's literally just the Switch again, but one square inch smaller surface area?
So the reason, peep behind the curtain here, I'm sorry to everyone. Game Jabbar might be a fictitious imagining of mine.
No.
Inspired by a tweet about a rumor from someone who supposedly worked on it, saying that I think they said they had felt it in an opaque box. It was strange. And someone put a picture of the Game Jabbar saying that it would have magnetic controllers that attach to the side of it. Now, if there's any truth to that, then I would look at like a Switch 2 sort of thing, which honestly... Yeah.
That's what they should do. In my estimation. I just think that Nintendo has a habit of making the Wii U, and we don't need that.
I'm so scared they're going to try to reinvent the wheel when all we really need is an upgraded Switch. Because right now, it is a perfect blend of like mobile and home console. Yeah. And it's super portable. When I used to travel before being stuck in this dimension, I'd bring it with me all the time. And, I'm hoping they don't reinvent the wheel. I want something good that's just...
I feel like they've got to include a mobile aspect to it, because Nintendo does really well when their consoles are mobile.
Wait, what do you... Oh, you mean like if they don't just do Switch 2? Yeah. Like an upgrade Switch? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. If they don't just make a Switch 2, if they make something else... I can't think of a crap name for you right now, but if they make something that's not just the Switch 2, it has to also be mobile, because otherwise Nintendo loses a lot of their market area. I think a lot of the success for the Switch is just how mobile it is.
I agree.
Because back before now, they had their mobile team and their console team. And they merge those development teams together for the Switch. I don't think it makes any sense for them with the success of it to then try to separate those out again. And I'm hoping that all indications would be that they would keep on their current path, just because nothing has gone wrong. It hasn't been a problem. It would be so bizarre if they're like, man, this road's going great, no issues. Let's completely deviate. But Nintendo does weird shit, so who knows?
Well, you know, as the Red January points out in chat, Nintendo literally has a monopoly over the portable gaming market. And that's exactly why they're going to split those teams back up for the Nintendo 4DS. This time you could smell your games. And it's got those like little feather things by your feet that make you think that like rats or bugs or whatever are running under the chairs.
Hey, you said they're going to split the teams up again. But are you implying that there will be a non-smell version?
Yeah, so that's sort of going to be the problem, much like with the Nintendo 3DS. There will be ports of the game that don't have the smell feature, and then you're going to have the problem of like some games will rely heavily on the smell gimmick. Like the new WarioWare, for example, is going to have a smell that mini game, and you're going to be fucked if you don't have the right hardware to support that.
Are there any WarioWare mini games you would want to smell? I think it's a pretty bad smell game on the whole.
That is true. Wario is not a good smelling individual. But with that said, I think that I'm ready to talk about our next topic. So we got through the good stuff, the fun stuff, the new Nintendo console. Ooh, yay. Now it's time to get into the dog shit, gang. This actually happened just today. Comes to us from a variety of sources, everything I'm going to talk about. Jeff Keighley on Twitter, Shinobi602 on Twitter, Wario64 on Twitter, and trueachievements.com. is the general minutia from which I pulled this information. I was trying to find a good way to cite it, and I couldn't, so I just threw them all at you at once. And that is, Microsoft is forcing Bethesda Studios to close 4 of their developers. So Arkane Austin, the creators of Redfall. Alpha Dog Games, the creator of various iOS and Android games, including Ninja Golf and Mighty Doom. And this is the most heartbreaking of them all, Tango Gameworks, the creators of the overnight success Hi-Fi Rush. In addition to those three completely shuttering, the staff at Roundhouse is going to be merged with the staff at ZeniMax. Roundhouse are the creators of Prey 2006 and most recently Rune 2 in 2019, previously under the name Human Head Studios after rebranding troubles and some legal issues. The most recent thing they've worked on is Redfall, and the most recent game they made was 2019. I don't really know why they're getting merged when everyone else is getting shuttered. But yeah, it's shitty news, gang.
Can I just say, put respect, some respect on Arcane Austin, because you gave them Redfall no mention of Prey, which hurt me a little bit.
Well, the only reason I mention Redfall is because I want to make this distinction that this is not a meritocracy. Because a lot of people looked at this decision and said, well, they made Redfall. Of course they got closed. Which normally I would agree with you. But they're right there alongside Tango Gameworks. And that just doesn't make any good goddamn sense. Hi-Fi Rush was incredibly successful. Red, I know you personally really loved it. And it just doesn't make a lot of good sense at all. And yeah, so... You know, we previously talked about the dangers of market consolidation and how it puts too many games and IPs into the same potentially volatile basket. And that's exactly what we're seeing pay off here. Any of these studios, if left to their own devices, some of them definitely would have failed. Roundhouse would have failed. But Tango would have been fine if they just weren't under Microsoft ownership. And this might seem bad for Microsoft, but remember that they do win on several business fronts. The reduced overhead, for one, and this is the big thing. You know, you look at this and you're like, well, why did they buy these people just to shut them down? Because it was never about making games. It was about keeping other people from making games and reducing the total competition on the market. It's all about that monopoly power, baby. And they can go fuck themselves.
Did you by any chance see the comments from the head of Arcane Lion, the other section of Arcane?
No, I didn't.
This is a little lengthy. He was talking about it on Twitter. But I suppose, let's see if I can cut it short a little. You know what? I'll just read it in full if that's all right. Permission be human. To any executive reading this, friendly reminder that video games are an entertainment cultural industry. Your business as a corporation is to take care of your artists slash entertainers and help them create value for you. Don't throw us into gold fever gambits. Don't use us as straw men for miscalculations slash blind spots. Don't make our work environments Darwinist jungles. You say we make you proud when we make a good game. Make us proud when times are tough. We know you can. We've seen it before. For now, great teams are sunsetting before our eyes again, and it's a fucking gut stab. Lion is safe, but please be tactful and discerning about all this, and respect affected folks.
Fuck yeah.
Respected folks' voice, and leave it room to be heard. It's their story to tell and their feelings to express.
Hell yeah. I'm glad that they're, you know, speaking some truth to power on that. That's awesome.
Yeah. I thought it was a good thing to include there because they're in a position to actually say something.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit more.
It makes me wonder, and I don't know this off the top of my head, how many of these studios were housed in America?
Yeah, I think that might have something to do with it. I mean, definitely Arcane Austin. I am not sure about Tango and the others, but I wouldn't be surprised if that is the case. You know, it's like every game company has a Montreal studio, and it's because Montreal pays you this like huge subsidy to open a game studio in Montreal. And America, you know, I don't think Austin has that. So I do think that a lot of it is we're moving the labor around. We're going to close the studios in the places where, you know, we actually have to pay people a living wage, and move them to where the labor is cheaper. But here's the thing. Even though these decisions might make a certain business sense, they're morally bankrupt and they have a complete disregard for people's livelihoods and the successes and failures being punished equally with no apparent reason given is going to kill morale at Microsoft. And, you know, for those reasons, I think it's safe to say Microsoft has slammed its penis in a car door. Ooh.
I slam my penis in the car door.
You slam your penis in the car door.
Jesus.
I fucking love Mel Blanc's yell. He was so good at it. By the way, this doesn't really chart at all. It's just worth, actually, it's probably not worth noting, but the head of Xbox head of studios who sent out that email's name was is Matt Booty. There are no jokes to be made here. We wouldn't make fun of anyone for their name.
Matt Booty's fine. Now, if his name was Max Booty, my God, the floodgates would open forth. The jokes then would flow free.
My respect.
Well, that is the shitty news from Xbox. We have more shitty news.
Wait, that's not the end of the shitty news?
Oh, wait. Actually, I do have one other thing to tack on to the Xbox thing. And that is that don't worry, because mere hours after announcing those heartbreaking studio closures, Xbox also announced that you can buy the new Fire Vapor Special Edition controller. Yeah, give it up for the Fire Vapor Special Edition controller.
Well, hold on. Let's see. Let's be fair. I don't care for it. No, okay. Yeah, it looks like a bowling ball.
I should have thought to make a visual for it.
That's okay. But we can do a hot or not controller episode one day.
Oh, that's such a good idea.
Yeah, it's a game we've played personally for years now. So, yeah, this pattern is bowling ball for sure.
Well, Red, do you want to lead us into our next tale?
Yeah, I'll dive on into this next tale. Helldivers 2 had a bit of a stink this past last week. PSN announced on the Steam discussion page Sony announced on the Steam discussion page for Helldivers 2 that a PSN account would now be required to continue playing the game, and it would be effective in a certain amount of days. The internet did not like that at all. That's kind of the gist of it. But if we want to like kind of break down a sequence of events, the game launched and like absolutely destroyed all of its projections. I think we're well aware of that the game was near unplayable for most people because the servers were just so congested. One of the things that the Arrowhead CEO, Johan, I cannot pronounce this man's last name, Pilstedt, decided to disable was the PSN account linking requirement to try to alleviate the servers. And the issue there is that a lot of these people who purchased and were playing the game live in countries not officially supported by PSN for Sony. And kind of like the language of the article is that the account linking plays a critical role in protecting our players and upholding the values and of safety and security provided on PlayStation and PlayStation Studio games. A lot of people took issue with that. Sony had two very large data breaches last year. And I mean, data breaches are just, we live in a data breached world. Your data is not safe if it's on the internet. That's my position on it.
Yeah, your data's done been breached.
Yeah. Yeah. Players even went to change. Players did not like this at all. They were scared they were not going to be able to play the game in these regions, and some people just did not want to have to link their PSN account. There became this narrative that it wasn't required at launch when it was, but it was disabled. So a lot of players were like, I don't want to make an account. I don't want to link an account. I don't want to do this at all. So they changed their reviews to negative. They were able to get Steam to refund their game. The stink was so big, Valve was just like, we'll just refund the game and turn off purchasing in areas that do not support PSN. Which I think added a validity to the issue, where people were like, well, see, you can't even buy the game in these regions anymore. If you can't do that, you can't play it. So it became mostly negative. Even I think one of the community managers on their official Discord had a message in there saying, make your voice heard, change your reviews to negative, and get refunds. It's the only way we're going to be able to show that we don't like this. Which I was surprised they still had a job after all of this, if I can be honest with you.
But, yeah.
And then there was, of course, I'm not jealous of a community manager. Getting death threats and getting pictures of your house emailed to you is terrifying. Jesus not the way to Christ. Not the way to get change to happen.
No.
So very, very serious right there. Do y'all want to chime in on that before I keep going on this?
Yeah, I'll you know, throw a little something in here, and that is just that, like, yeah, you don't harass community managers, because they are often, if I'm not mistaken, that's mostly an unpaid position, right? That's just like a volunteer thing.
Some places it's a paid position. Some places it's like, this is part of your, this is
either way, they don't have shit to do with any of these decisions. And I think, Red, you're going to get into just how much Sony has to do with this versus Arrowhead and all of that. I'm eager to hear that, but point your anger at the people it should be directed towards.
Yeah. Yeah. Captain, do you want to chime in before I move on to why this issue was so big?
I will say this when it comes to data breaches. I do feel like there is a certain amount of concern that should still be had in terms of data breaches happen, but I don't know that the outlook of whatever my data is already out there is necessarily a one I can advocate for. Like, you should still probably take steps to protect what you can and be cautious when you can.
Yeah, but we're talking about two breaches in a year, and not we're talking about like email addresses and maybe some credit card numbers. We're not talking about your entire credit history. Where places like Equifax,
maybe some credit card numbers is
at the same time. Captain, do you have a PSN account?
Yeah, I have a PSN. I'm just saying, well, like, for the, yeah, but I'm saying for the people who don't want it, like, there is something. Yeah,
fair enough. Anyways, yeah. Red, continue.
It was kind of a perfect storm of why this issue exploded. The requirement was disabled so soon after launch that the public perception was that you don't have to link an account to play this game. And, you know, just anecdotally speaking, based on memory playing the game, when you're looking at who's online, it tells you if they're Steam or if they're PlayStation. So everything about the game made it feel like that wasn't a genuine requirement. And there's not really a huge precedent for it on Steam, you know, for you to link a PSN account on Steam to play an online game. The notion that you could not play this game in countries not supported by PSN. It's kind of a half-truth. Yes, terms of service and everything, yes, like, they don't support these countries. But people own PlayStations in these countries, and people were playing online in a lot of these countries by creating accounts simply by having the address say they're in the closest country that PSN supports. And it worked. It was a workaround, and it was semi-official workaround that was recommended in some direct messages with support before I've seen. So it's a genuine concern, but it wasn't like, it wasn't something that was untested ground before. Steam removed the ability to purchase in those countries, which, like I said earlier, added validity to this idea that you can't play in these countries. If you can't purchase here, you can't play here. Sony said, again, the requirement for security reasons, even though they had two large data breaches last year, and like we talked about, yes, I do agree, changing your passwords when you're aware of a data breach, using two-step, using authenticator apps when able, like, you should definitely protect your data as much as you can, but data breaches aren't, you shouldn't be surprised by a data breach. So I don't feel like that is a genuine worry, because it's hard to quantify how much of your data is out there now. Had it not been disabled at launch, I think this would have been a non-issue. And had people not capitalized on the idea of being unable to play this game in certain countries, it would not be an issue. And people in these countries, like I said, they're already playing PSN through either a VPN or just making an account in a different home as a country as their home. And it wasn't, it was, these boys never heard of a Swiss cheese model. When you line up a bunch of slices of Swiss cheese and you think of each little issue as a slice, eventually the holes shouldn't line up. But in this case, the holes lined up. And
chat, let me get a show of hands on who knows the Swiss cheese model. If you know the Swiss cheese model, if you're a big Swiss cheese head out there, throw it in chat, tweet at us, let us know. But that said, Red, you know, I think you described the issue very well, and discussed. So my understanding is that there was some back and forth as far as Arrowhead saying Sony is making us do this, and then kind of maybe that not being the case or being the case. Where does the blame here? Whose shoulders does that really fall on?
My opinion is Sony 100%. But I don't think it's as easy as saying Sony. So Arrowhead's not responsible for where the game, what regions the game was sold in on Steam.
Right.
That was the publisher. That was Sony. Now the CEO was responsible for disabling it early on in the beginning, and you could certainly attribute some blame to Arrowhead not keeping that, you know, keeping that up in the air. Hey, you're going to have to link a PSN account one day. We only turned it off because of this. But why would you think that's an issue when so many other games already have that? And it's aggravating for most people, but it's not like a huge issue. Most people aren't like, man, I don't want to play the game that all of my friends are playing because I have to make an account with a third party through Steam.
Yeah.
Heaven forbid EA launchers or any other kind of launcher.
Ubisoft is in Steam. Or, yeah, it's the list goes on.
Yeah, and, even and CD that's Projekt Red.
Where I fall on this, I think, is like, well, wait, have we gotten the conclusion of this story?
Not quite, but.
Okay. Well, yeah. Go ahead and let us know how this wrapped before I expound.
Yeah, so Sony, you know, the players won, and Sony heard the outcry of a million reviews being turned negative, and they said this will not be a requirement for this game, which a few people started looking ahead at what I think Michael Cuey has already mentioned in chat, Ghost of Tsushima. The single player will not require you to create a PSN account or link a PSN account. The multiplayer on Steam will. Also, the PSN overlay on Steam will. And I doubt Sony ever lets anybody turn off linking on day one of a game anymore.
Yes,
because that would be the very easiest thing. If that had, that is the crux of the issue. If that hadn't have happened, none of this you wouldn't have as much fallout here.
Absolutely agree.
I suspect the biggest reason for all this, other than just like, because look, I said the thing about, you know, protecting your data. That wasn't so much meant as a defense of this. I just, the software developer in me has to be like, okay, let's be a little careful. All that said, I think a lot of arguments were disingenuous in this regard. And I think a lot of it just comes from, it hits a little different when you already own a thing, you've been playing it for a while, and then you're told, hey, you need to make an account here to keep playing, rather than doing it at sign up or at the start. Especially because, like, hey, I made the account. What does it do? Don't worry about it. Like, it doesn't add anything to your experience. And I think that, and that probably hurts things too.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And that's where my kind of view on this is that, it's cool that gamers want to fight. Right? Like, I will agree, like, there are some slightly shitty things going on here, and I am glad that Sony reversed course. At the same time, I think that the view here is a little myopic, because this is one of the less harmful practices going on in video games today. Right? Like, let's be real. What we've been harping on, about licenses being removed for things like The Crew, that is a much more dangerous practice, given it happened to a much less popular game. And so I think that there is this really great thing we saw here where players were able to, like, let their voice be known and actually change the industry. But we need to direct that towards some of these more harmful areas. Like, we should be burning Ubisoft down right now. And we're not, you know? So it's kind of like watching people celebrate a very small battle in a very large war that we are actively losing. And though, I do have to say this. Many copies of the game were refunded that will not be rebought. And many Steam reviews have been turned negative that will never turn back. Meaning that I really think in the end of all this, Sony has slammed its penis in a car door.
You slam your penis in the car door.
I know it's coming! I know it's coming!
Also, I want to say,
God, my own joke. Sorry.
Oh no! I just wanted to say, when doing research for a story that's upcoming, it mentioned this one. It was an article from Forbes about how that controversy, another one coming up, show that these studios need to listen to their audiences more. And I'm just gonna say, I don't think that. This was a publisher thing, largely. It's a wild thing to be like, how dare you not listen to your customers?
Yeah, the thing is,
really, that wasn't the studio's fault so much.
Yeah, the thing here in this case is that Sony owns the Helldivers IP, and in order for Arrowhead to make a Helldivers game, they have to publish it under Sony.
Look, I'm a simple man. I see a dumb article, I give comment on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that, like, the and the publisher is really not interfacing with the consumer at all.
Yeah.
Like, they don't know and they don't care.
Sony makes smart business practices.
It's just a weird, like, for shame moment. It's,
yeah. Yeah.
Hold on.
It may be worth noting before we leave this story. At time of research, I didn't see or hear anything about Steam/Valve. Re-enabling the purchase of Helldivers 2 in regions that it disabled due to this controversy.
Ooh. Yeah, that's something to keep an eye on. We might come back with an update on that next week, because they really could have slammed their penis in the car door pretty hard there if they now are permanently banned from selling in those countries, because I can't imagine Steam was too happy about this whole thing. You know, given the Steam storefront can be kind of messy sometimes, but typically they don't like you fucking with their sales. But if you guys would like to move on, Captain has a short little happy story for us in the middle of all the horse shit.
Okay, I wasn't sure if I was about to actually, I was about to see if you wanted to rearrange, but you know, let's do a short happy story because I realized I had a good segue. But Microsoft is releasing MS-DOS 4.0 as an open source software now, or it's going open source, and that's going well. It wasn't like solely a game preservation move. It's definitely going to help a lot, and I don't know. I couldn't find a whole lot of connective tissue necessarily between that and the efforts towards game preservation, but that they claim they want to do in the past. But it is like, it's a good move. It's a good move, and we celebrate small victories here. That's going to keep some things alive. It means it'll be easier to go back to a lot of things that should allow people to make tools to update compatibility.
Yeah, it's really cool.
It's just good. I don't know. It's
really cool that they're doing this. I think digital preservation is one of the most important issues that we are facing today. And we risk losing the record of, you know, one of the most transformative moments in human history if we lose digital preservation. So I think if we don't invest in it and fight for it, it doesn't happen. So, you know, this is one drop in the bucket compared to the bucket of bad that Microsoft did earlier today. But it is a nice little feel-good story.
I'm eager to see, like, even if it doesn't impact games a lot, you know, it's still, like, for just software preservation, really good. I'm eager to see what other things might come in the future. Looking for Windows 98 open source.
I'm installing Vista right now. And that's 2 minutes. That's all the good news you're getting today. 2 minutes. We gave you 2 minutes of good news. So enjoy that.
Hey, Switch wasn't bad either.
Yeah, the Switch wasn't bad. Doing. You're right. That was like 10.
Yeah,
you're getting like a combined 10% of the show, maybe. I can't do math.
We made a meal out of it. It's fine.
Yeah. A snack anyway. On the side of all this dog shit, which let's get back to. Because I want to talk about Riot Games bricking people's PCs. I'm not the developer here. Captain, you might want to elaborate for our audience on some of these issues, but I'm going to try to sum this up as best I can. So, Riot Games, they use an anti-cheat software called Vanguard. And unlike most anti-cheat software, which like installs in parallel with the game and launches with the game and only runs when the game is running, Vanguard is on all the fucking time, and it boots from kernel. And you have to go into your PC's BIOS settings to enable safe boot to allow Vanguard to even work in the first place. If you've ever been in your PC's BIOS settings, then you know how much of a pain in the ass that can be. So they decided that this system had worked so well for Valorant that they were going to start requiring League of Legends players to use it. And when they did, a small handful of people found that their PC wouldn't turn back on. Riot came out and said in a Reddit post, which, by the way, all that background was from VG247.com. And then Riot said in a Reddit post that they have no known cases of Vanguard bricking a person's PC. They just don't know about it. And then they went on to list two niche cases where they might brick your PC. Essentially, if you have in your BIOS settings some highly specific and frankly odd things going on, then it can cause a interference with Vanguard. And one of these situations, I looked into the kind of the how to fix them. One of them seemed pretty easy, but the other requires you to possibly reformat all your hard drives, which is bad.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's not good. But at the end of the day, it is Riot's job to plan for these contingencies and ensure that their software works on every PC, or at least that you get a proper warning. So I personally uninstalled Vanguard from my PC. I might reinstall it once they've had a little time to work this out. But, you know, when you're talking about $1,000+ machine, that's a really scary possibility that someone could just throw a brick on it.
Yep. That shit sucks. I guess all to say, not a ton, like, how to put it. If you want some clarification, the big thing with Vanguard is that it works at what's called the kernel level of your computer, which is, without getting too deep, it's the most central part, or the base level stuff. A lot of concerns with that are often around, like, security, because companies love to take your data and sell it. And so, there are concerns around that, or what all it can access. But this is certainly another issue that presents itself because of that. It's operating on a level of your system that you might not want a whole lot of things accessing. or you want to be very particular about it. And yeah, it's concerning. It's concerning that it would break anyone's computer. No matter what settings or how it's set up.
Yeah, and from what I could find about how Vanguard works, they claim that all the information they gather is a screen capture of your game along with some additional information regarding your settings. Are you in full screen, borderless, etc.? Because they say that that helps them detect cheating. But at the same time, is cheating that big? I mean, I don't like cheaters in games. Is it that big of a deal that we need to like hijacking people's machines to make sure it doesn't happen?
That's always the interesting part. To take a moment of as devil's advocate, I will say, just from my time playing Destiny, like, it doesn't matter about when they do ban waves and things like that. People get so mad when they see cheaters and they point out, like, how are they getting away with this? Which is to say, like, well, a lot of this is automated. You don't have someone just watching your match, you know? You don't have someone looking at it right there. Takes time and effort to get this shit. And so, on one hand, yeah, it does get really frustrating, but people get so fucking pissed when they see a cheater, I think it's every single time I've seen a blatant cheater, and maybe it just says something about some of the people we play games with. They will always say, how do they get away with that? How is that possibly okay? How could they ever do this? And it's like, well, there
you're
are
doing
reasons.
An impression of a friend that no one knows. I mean, some of
that wasn't an impression. I was just
it
saying
was kind of you kind of put the accent on a little bit. We might have him on the show sometime. You guys will
find it's purely hypothetical. Purely hypothetical,
look,
friend.
It's not so much for, it doesn't matter if they know him or not. It's to say, I bet a lot of people know one of those guys.
Yeah. Well, and you know, oh, I'm sorry, Red.
Well, to take up defense of that guy, if I had something at kernel level anti-cheat, I would hope it would stop cheating.
True. Well, this is speaking towards something that isn't using kernel level.
Kernel anti-cheat is kind of like the broken window policy of gaming in a much less serious way, where it's like the authorities promise you, like, hey, let us surveil you and we'll stop petty crime. And everyone's like, I hate petty crime. I agree to be surveilled. And, you know, that's like bad.
Yeah. Typically. Yeah. I guess the whole point being, people get so furious, and I get it. It feels like something super unfair is happening when someone cheats in a game and is ruining an experience. And depending on the game, like, that can get really, really maddening. But all, you know. I think sometimes developers are put in a weird position where you've got people yelling for a solution, and one of the better solutions you've got tends to be invasive, and it you have an audience of people yelling, make the cheating stop, and so you provide the best solution you've got to make the cheating stop, and people get mad about, well, not that solution. It's not to say they shouldn't try to find something better, but I can see, like, you're in a rough position there.
Michael Q is commenting in the chat, killing me. But, you know, to wrap this discussion up, in addition to the small number of PCs that were bricked, it seemed that a lot of other players playing League of Legends were also having bad experiences with instability, crashes, and weird hardware quirks, which makes the bad experience of playing League of Legends even worse. And overall, I think because of this, you guys know what I think that they did, that Riot Games did?
Man, if I could guess.
I think they slammed their penis in the car door.
Hell yeah, it's my shit, right?
I slammed my penis in the car door.
You slammed your penis in the car door.
Now.
Okay. This might not be my shit for an inside joke, but.
Interesting. Interesting.
An inside joke. You're all in on it now. You wouldn't last a minute in the asylum where they raised me. Tumblr.com.
Okay, T Swift.
Well, to bring us out of our last shitty news for the day, I believe that, Captain, you have one more piece of dog shit for us to get through.
I do. So, I mentioned last week that Tarkov was fucking up, but we didn't get into the hard details as much. So, I wanted to kind of do a better, a deeper dive on that. I think we briefly gave an overview of the fact that Tarkov had a standard pricing tier of $50. And a, like, early, it's still an early access game, but, like, let's say a founder style tier called Edge of Darkness tier. That was $150. It promised all future DLC. And now they are introducing the Unheard Edition, which is $250 and includes a full PvE version of the game, bigger pockets for players, and an equipable item that'll make AI characters less aggressive to players. And to be clear, actually had a little bit of trouble disambiguating this. I saw someone refer to PvE as player versus everyone, but PvE conventionally means player versus enemy. All to say, the developer Battlestate said that it wasn't DLC, the PvE mode wasn't DLC. But after enough outcry, has backed down, saying that the Edge of Darkness owners will get access to the mode, but in waves due to limited server capacity. Now, my sources for this are IGN and PC Gamer. And they kind of take different perspectives that I thought were interesting. I guess first I want to bring up their COO and studio head decided to. He's been trying to communicate with the community in ways that aren't entirely successful. He's saying that he's sorry, or he would like to say that he is very sorry that fans and the game community in general are experiencing these feelings. which you might notice is the traditional fake apology.
Yeah, he did the whole passive voice and everything, man. Yeah, that's hilarious.
I'm sorry you feel that, they're pointing out in the IGN article that there was a comment about, I'm sorry you feel this way doesn't equal to, I'm sorry I betrayed you. But, and they promise that some of the items, they'll balance the items and perks they'll be provided. But they do want to provide more to the players who have already paid the $250. So, oh yeah, he also said, thank you for your time, love and hate. Thank you for the increased attention to the current situation.
What an asshole. asshole.
Yeah, no, it's just rubbing dirt in the wound. But then, I was not aware. Backlash stepped up further because an esports team, Evasion GG, who's done, they've hosted more than 200 tournaments for the game, has come out on Twitter to say that Ball State is a bad company to work with as a result of control issues and blatant nepotism and more. Yeah,
I feel like that and more is also doing a lot of heavy lifting there.
Well, that is to quote the article. The direct quote says, what happened to the Tarkov community over the past week is what has been happening to us for the past 2 years dealing with Ball State.
Promises
not kept, gaslighting, event cancellations, control issues, blatant nepotism, and all the while wasting our time, money, and efforts. This year we found out how terribly they've been treating the smaller event organizations as well. Now the treatment has spread to the player base.
Forget Kendrick versus Drake. I'm here for this.
Yeah, we've held back sharing this information, but seeing how the community was treated as a whole recently was too much. We will not create Tarkov events until we see things truly change.
Good, fuck them.
But another thing that the PC Gamer article, it has an interesting point of view where the author of the article, Jake Tucker, is a Tarkov player and is pointing out, like, a thing a lot of people might miss about this is that a lot of this move, like, he doesn't even care as much about the PvE mode. He thinks the other additions are against the spirit of what the game even is.
Yeah.
Which is to say, Tarkov, as he puts it, is a game where every item is precious. Every pickup you get matters because the scarcity is so high. And you have to make choices about what you can carry in. Having larger pocket space or even just differently arranged pocket space in this way actually is very advantageous to these players who can, as they put it, run into raids with basically naked with just a few things with their gun and come out much better risk reward than a normal player who doesn't have that pocket space.
Yeah, it's absolutely pay to win.
Huh?
It's absolutely pay to win. It's
blatant pay to win. The other one is that item that makes the NPCs less likely to attack you. I believe it's within 60 meters of you or so. If they see you, they won't shoot at you.
God damn. They won't
be aggro.
Oh my God.
Before that, you had the chance of turning a door or getting seen by an NPC and just getting headshot. Like, sometimes it happened. But as the author puts it, as a game, Escape from Tarkov has never felt particularly fair. AI characters would sometimes headshot you as soon as they see you. Server disconnection could mean you reconnect 5 minutes later, half starved to death in a bush. Returning the wrong corner could see you instantly blown away by someone replicating whatever nonsense or position has put out on TikTokers. Stank Rat. I have no idea who that was. I was going to admit it, but whatever. Well, Stank Rat's in the mix.
Captain, you don't like know Stank Rat's Rat?
Living up to the name.
But as he says, but the crucial thing is the Escape from Tarkov always screwed over everyone equally.
Right.
The idea is like, yeah, you could just have players snipe or take, or they are just not going to face the heat that other players are facing.
Well, you know,
just to say that in his, he said that Tarkov has always been a flawed experience, but he'd always had the confidence that, like, they had a vision for the game and had, they were headed somewhere. They had a thing they wanted it to be. And changes like this that fundamentally undermine the premise kind of make you feel that maybe that vision isn't there.
Yeah, I like games that are uncompromising experiences. You know, I like Souls games. I like Hunt Showdown is uncompromising. And so to take an uncompromising game and then make it pay to compromise is just disgusting.
It's rough. It's really rough. And yeah, this sucks. And I genuinely don't know, like, I don't know how you bounce back in terms of regaining that community support, especially when you don't own the problem. This one's just such a blatantly greedy move. Tarkov is, there's the feeling that author presented that the developers might be just trying to get the money they can before that 1.0 release that should be coming soon, and they just want to move on to the next project, you know?
Very possible.
And but, you know, that sucks.
Tarkov is not a big game. According to data from activeplayer.io, which gives it a lot of Steam data, to where you can view player count, its monthly player base, it is about the 10 times the size of my favorite niche shooter, Hunt Showdown, which I previously mentioned. But it is dwarfed by the almost 30 times over blockbuster game Call of Duty Warzone, right? So, like, in the grand scheme of shooters, Tarkov is not the biggest thing. And this means, when you have a small player base, it means that community and trust are essential to your success. And now that community feels betrayed, and that trust has been irreparably broken. And therefore, I think it's safe to say that Battlestate Games has...
Did they slam it? You gotta let me know. Did they slam it?
Guys, I'm honestly starting to lose enthusiasm for this bit. Five times for the same bit. It was too many times. Should I even do it? Everybody knows now. It's not a surprise.
I'm on the edge of my seat. Did they slam it or not?
You really mean that?
I think they might have slammed it.
You guys really mean that? You really think it's funny? You really think it's good? Because they slammed that penis in a car door.
3, 2, 1.
I slammed my penis in the car door.
You slammed your penis in the car door.
I like the Smash variation quite a lot.
Yeah, I kind of saved that for last. I was kind of doing it, lull you into a false sense of security with the first three, which were different animations, but fundamentally similar, switching to SpongeBob, and then switching back to the other one, but with a twist. I felt like that was a really...
I actually didn't know what the variation the second one was.
Oh, yeah, it's just a different animation for it. I spent a lot of time today. I spent a lot of time today doing this. But no one tell my employer. And with that... I think we're pretty much at the end of our show, gang. Do you guys agree?
Yeah, unless you want to take a moment to talk about what we've been playing.
We can. Everybody's got about, you know, another 10. We could do that. It's not going to take very long.
Yeah. I'd like to hear about a little bit more about what you've been playing. Because, sure. I might know what it is, but I want to know more about the why and what you've been up to.
So I was watching the Red January stream yesterday, and there was a fella in that chat talking about FTL, which I have been trying to beat for like 10 years. My relationship with FTL is A good one, I would say. It is the game that I played because, okay, flashback, me in college, which in TV shows means that they just give you a different haircut. And I'm sitting in class on my MacBook, right? I have a MacBook. I can't play shit, but I can play FTL. So I played the shit out of it. Never beat it. Got to the final boss fight. Made it through the first phase. Was then gutted to find out it was a multi-phase boss fight. And, you know, lost. So I'm like, yeah, I kind of want to go back and I want to give this game another shot and try to beat it again. It's a strategy game. I love strategy games, and I feel like I've gotten better at them over the years. That said, going back to it, man, it is beating my ass all over again. I got to remember how to play this shit. I put a few hours in last night, and you know, I can make it through about three or four systems before getting blown to pieces. It's just the resource management piece of it is very tough because the scrap that you get in that game is so valuable, and you are always looking for more. And then also, it like forces you to make narratively difficult choices. Like, for example, a pirate is holding up a civilian ship, and they're like, hey, we'll pay you if you just walk away. And most games, you say, no, fuck you, pirate, because I am a good person, and I have a conscience, and I'm not going to take your blood money, you piece of shit. So you fight them, right? And then if you fight them, the reward you get for winning the fight isn't that much more than what they were offering you in the first place. And if you're like me and you're always trying to be a goody two-shoes in space, you're draining your resources. So it's interesting in that it sort of forces a moral compromise in a more sort of realistic way than something like Fallout, where like the morally correct choice will always net you just as much, if not more, rewards as the selfish choice.
And don't forget, if I recall correctly, aren't you trying to outrun a bigger threat to everyone?
Yeah, you're trying to outrun this fleet of rebel ships that is sweeping its way through the galaxy, right?
Okay, yeah, I was gonna say like you may have. Maybe better for you to get there or to, yeah, get away. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, I think that's a fun way of looking at it. I haven't actually considered that from like the thought experiment angle of like, is it actually better to let this one group of people die and sort of fight the bigger threat? That's an interesting way of coming to that problem.
Because I believe I might be confusing it with another game of a similar nature, where you have a threat is trying to make it back to your home planet and you are like racing to get there to get like warn them.
Yeah.
I may have confused that.
I need to read the story bit at the beginning again, because I read it, you know, the first time I played it and then skipped over it every subsequent time. And now I've been playing it for, you know, 10 plus years. So I totally forgot. But yeah, that's what I've been playing.
I have been playing the Super Mario RPG remake that is on Switch. My biggest, like, I'm having fun with it. I blasted through a good deal of it. Biggest thing I have to say now is, like, I get why people wanted Geno and Smash. I don't understand the fervor. Like,
Gino's the only man that could ever make me come.
Like, it's one of those things, like, Gino's a cool character, but I don't understand why it was that rabid. That's still weird to me. But then again, like, as we've seen with even the Helldivers thing, sometimes people just latch onto an idea and then just go. Otherwise, I was also playing the Metroid Prime remaster, and other than I don't care for the Meta Ridley fight, which Salt has already heard me talk about plenty earlier, it's a really good game. I had a really good time with it. I have the final boss fight to go, so that will definitely be wrapped today.
I do like how you just referred to me as Salt, which is better than referring to me by my actual name. because it's my gamer tag. But what's referring to me by my podcast name?
You know.
But progress. I'll take it.
I meant tiny. I was thinking of it earlier, and I screwed up my own head. I was like, nope, take a note. That is not. Don't
hey,
do
look,
that.
I don't have to edit out of the show, right? So it's not that bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, Metroid Prime 1, I did find it interesting that, like, that game is really heavy on the amount of things to scan at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
But the scans, like, you could make the argument, well, you're just seeing a lot of new stuff, but it also kind of feels like they front-loaded a lot of it. Because later on, there's so many more rooms where it's like, I look to scan, and there's nothing. Don't worry.
I have a love-hate relationship with scanning in a video game.
I totally agree. Because on one hand, I'm like, oh, look, the lore. But on the other hand, I'm like, I would also like to play the game.
It's a nice way of like, hey, here's some details on this enemy and some tips on how to beat them. But at the same time, you can read all that lore later, except for when it's not lore. There are some details that basically if it's a red scan, some of those go in your logbook. Yellow or orange scans, nope. And those sometimes can still have interesting information. So you can't save it all for later. It's all that said, it's kind of a relic of its era. Like, they're still trying things out. They haven't gotten everything down yet. Some of the boss fights, the major boss fights in one, have a tendency to be too long. Like, the health bar's too long. You fight a big plant monster thing at one point, and they make you go four rounds with it in an ever-increasing, like, yeah, the difficulty is raising in terms of some things you had to do for the speed with which you do them. But honestly, you kind of get the point of the fight early. And I don't know. At least could have been three. Could have been three rounds. The classic three is better. But I don't know. Good game. Big hot take. But it's been nice revisiting it. It's been a while. I really look forward to presumably the Metroid Prime 2 and 3 remakes or remasters when they come along. But right now, I'm more eager for 2 than 3. Because 2 was, I think, the hardest of them.
Yeah, 3 is really the Spider-Man 3 of the Metroid Prime series. And I'm just saying that because there's a Venom sort of thing going on.
Yeah. I will say this, Metroid Prime 3 does land better than Raimi's Spider-Man 3, because there are two Spider-Man 3s now.
There's only one real one.
But it does, I don't know if that's the weakest of them, though. Could be. I could see the argument. I think the Space Marine armor is goofy and dumb looking in 3, when you actually see some other humans. But that's it for me.
Want to talk just a little bit before we go?
Yeah, I went on Game Pass and downloaded Outer Worlds, and in about an hour of playtime, I think I've had more fun playing it than I have any Fallout game. And fellas, I think I like a color palette.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that statement. I think we found the common ground. The Fallout feud can end in us all agreeing that Outer Worlds is better.
We talked about it pre-show, and I like Outer Worlds. I wasn't necessarily looking to fight over it, but I don't know if I like it more than Fallout.
Captain, you need to know. You're not on Twitter, but you're getting your ass beat on Twitter.
Yeah,
don't like Fallout. I didn't expect it, but the reviews are in, and unfortunately, we are the minority of people that respond on Twitter.
Well, let me tell you this, then. Because I will say, I earlier today just saw a shit ton of Twitter comments and just bot. Not on our own stuff.
What but, I do like
to say, Twitter can eat my ass.
What I do like about Outer Worlds is, like, a lot of people, I think, had problem with how linear it was. But I kind of like that because it's, like, all the good story stuff is kind of just right there in front of you. But also, yeah, Red, talk to us a little bit about what you've been enjoying about it.
I don't mean to harp on this again, but the animations feel a little bit better for sure. There's actual sort of a melee combat in the game. It's basically the system is basically, you know, Fallout ish the way they do their stats and perks and everything, but it feels better to play. And I can't put that into data for you right now.
That's fair. And like you said, I think Space is just cooler than Wasteland.
Look, I'll give you Space is cooler than Wasteland, but okay. Earlier point, color palette. Fallout 4's got a great color palette. Now, New Vegas and 3, it's a little bit more muted and has weird filters. But 4 looks fantastic. However, last week I said, this man never picked up a Ripper. And this man absolutely proved it. Because, no! Did you try the melee combat in Fallout? Because I don't think you did. There's a lot of melee combat. It's not the most sophisticated, but there's a shit ton of melee weapons. It's great. It's fun.
There's only one problem with a Ripper. I barely know her.
I know.
Ow! Well, gang, with that, that's our show. Thanks for listening, everybody. Captain, where can our newly found just throngs of fans that all blocked this episode because I named it Slam My Penis, find us?
That's an excellent question. No. Okay. One day I'll quit doing that bit. No, you can find us on
YouTube.
Don't
worry, I did the same bit 5 times in one episode. You're allowed.
You can find us on YouTube at Tiny Big Dude, as well as on podcast platforms Spotify, Apple, and Amazon by searching Couch Dimension.
You can also find us on Twitch every Tuesday at 5:15 p.m. Central Standard Time, because we are trapped here by a wizard.
Oh, you guys thought I had one for the outro too, didn't you? No, the show's just over now.